One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, friend, and welcome back to the Renaissance English History Podcast, a part of the Agora Podcast Network and the original Tudor podcast telling stories of 16th century England since 2009. I am your host, Heather, and I'm a storyteller who makes history accessible because I believe it's a pathway to understanding who we are, our place in the universe, and being much more deeply connected to our own humanity. So today we are going to talk about spies, specifically Elizabeth I's spy network. I've talked a little bit about some of the figures involved. We talked about Francis Walsingham in an episode I did way back, gosh, close to 10 years ago. There was a 2015, I think, episode on Francis Walsingham. You know what? I realize I have never done a full episode on William Cecil. Or Robert Cecil. So I have added that to my list. You guys, I have a list that's like, I don't know, 4 pages long of things I want to talk about and research and everything. So some of those get turned into members only, patron only episodes. Others become episodes on the main feed. Speaking of which, thank you to the newest Patreon member, Una. Welcome, Una. Patrons get extra episodes, author chats. Depending on what level you're at, you get a free tutor planner. You get courses, mini audio courses every month. This month, the one I'm working on is on James I and the Union of the Crown. Depending on their level, patrons also get discounts to my merch shop, all kinds of fun stuff. So you can get those perks in addition to the warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing you are supporting an independent podcaster and creator by either going to patreon.com/englandcast. That's patreon.com/englandcast. Or if you are listening to this on YouTube, you can just click join this channel and you get the same stuff. Whatever is easiest for you, I try to make it easy for you to support me, so it's like me helping you helping me. Anyway, welcome, Una. So like I said, some of the things on my list get turned into members-only mini-casts. Others go out on the feed, and I have added William Cecil to that list. So let's talk about it. In this episode, we are going to unravel the complex web woven by 3 pivotal figures, William Cecil, Lord Burghley, his son Robert Cecil, and the enigmatic spymaster Francis Walsingham. Together, they orchestrated a network of spies whose efforts were not only crucial for the Queen's security, but pivotal in shaping the course of English history. We'll dissect the plots they uncovered, explore the espionage techniques they employed, and consider the enduring impact of their secretive endeavors long after the Virgin Queen's reign. So just some background. Of course, Elizabeth ascended to the throne in 1558, a period teeming with political intrigue and religious upheaval. England was an isolated Protestant nation on the fringes of a largely Catholic Europe, making her a beacon of heresy in the eyes of her rivals. The excommunication by Pope Pius V in 1570 not only deepened her conflict with the Catholic monarchs, but also marked her for assassination, because the Pope basically said, if you want to assassinate her, no biggie. So this made an effective spy network not just valuable, but vital. Espionage during Elizabeth's reign evolved beyond mere political necessity it became an art form. Led by the Cecils and Francis Walsingham, the network extended its tendrils across Europe, infiltrating enemy courts and intercepting communications. This web of spies wasn't just about gathering intelligence, it was about ensuring survival. They used ciphers, secret correspondences, and double agents, transforming statecraft into a battleground of wits and secrecy. So we're also going to talk about the specific threats that spurred this network's creation, like the Ridolfi plot, which sought to replace Elizabeth with Mary, Queen of Scots. Actually, a number of plots sought to replace Elizabeth with Mary, Queen of Scots. But we will gain a clearer view of the often precariousness of Elizabeth's reign. Each plot foiled was not merely a victory, but a necessity preventing invasions, uprisings, and regicide. So let's start by looking at each of these three figures. We're going to start with William Cecil. I'm going to talk the longest about him. So William Cecil, the first Lord Burleigh, was Elizabeth I's principal advisor for most of her reign, and his mastery of espionage played a pivotal role in safeguarding her throne. Born in 1520 in Lincolnshire, William Cecil was educated at St. John's College, Cambridge. He received a rigorous training in administration and the classics. But his entry into royal service began under Edward VI, where his administrative talents were first recognized. It was his staunch Protestant beliefs and strategic acumen that caught the eye of Elizabeth I, whom he met during her time as princess, particularly during her house arrest under Mary I's reign. So William Cecil's tenure as an influential political figure under Edward VI saw him holding positions like Chancellor of the Order of the Garter and Secretary of State. But the landscape drastically changed with Edward's death and the succession crisis that followed. Cecil became entangled in the Duke of Northumberland's controversial plot to place Lady Jane Grey on the throne, a scheme devised to prevent the Catholic Mary from becoming queen. Initially, Cecil was resistant, and he wrote letters to his wife saying he was going to try to stay away from it, but he eventually succumbed to the pressure. He signed documents that promoted Jane's brief, ill-fated reign. He justified his participation as obedience to King Edward's command, a move that kind of exemplified his pragmatic approach to survival in treacherous times. That survival and his position became precarious under Mary I because he was a known Protestant, and also his previous political maneuvers. Pretty much everybody involved in that plot to bring Jane on got put in the Tower or executed. But despite his earlier involvement in the Protestant government, Cecil adeptly navigated the Catholic revival under Mary. He wasn't primarily targeted, mostly because he didn't have a very high profile or high rank during most of the very divisive policies that were put into place. And he did adapt. So he outwardly conformed to the restored Catholic practices. He attended Mass and he reconciled publicly with the Catholic Church. His survival strategy included distancing himself from active opposition, and he also engaged in some subtle intrigue against Northumberland once Mary's ascension seemed inevitable. Cecil's cautious yet opportunistic tactics allowed him to maintain a semblance of loyalty to Mary, which he leveraged by presenting himself as a cooperative figure to the incoming regime. So he was able to emerge out of Mary's reign pretty unscathed, which left him poised to reclaim a central role when Elizabeth ascended. So Cecil then serves Elizabeth when she's queen, and he was motivated by both the precariousness of Elizabeth's position. She was a Protestant monarch, plus she was a woman in a very male-dominated society. So he established her spy network as the cornerstone of her internal and external security strategies. He recognized early on that information was power, particularly in a period rife with religious conflicts and political instability. This foresight led him to orchestrate an intelligence system that not only protected Elizabeth, but also helped to stabilize her reign during its most vulnerable moments. Towards the end of Elizabeth's reign, as William Cecil aged and his health declined, his son Robert gradually began to assume more responsibilities. Robert officially took over as Secretary of State in 1596, and he was well prepared, having been deeply involved in the intelligence operations under his father's guidance. This early transition ensured a smooth succession, enabling him to maintain and enhance the espionage network critical to Elizabeth's security. The full assumption of his father's responsibility was seamless by the time William died in 1598, supported by his proven competence and the Queen's trust in his capabilities. Robert brought a more methodical approach to intelligence. He capitalized on the expanding network his father had established. Under his watch, the network matured, utilizing more sophisticated methods of code-breaking and covert operations. His tenure saw the orchestration of espionage activities that were crucial during pivotal moments like when James I was negotiating the Treaty of London, which ended the war with Spain. That was in 1604. And his adeptness at espionage not only maintained but strengthened the security apparatus his father had built, ensuring the crown's stability as Elizabeth's reign ended and James's began. And in fact, that network built for Elizabeth would ultimately save the life of James I. Robert Cecil himself was the principal discoverer of the gunpowder plot. I should add in here that that will be another episode to look at because Robert's involvement with the gunpowder plot is very shady. There's a lot of conspiracy ideas that he himself was involved in it, that he was a double agent, all that kind of stuff. And that maybe he was planning it himself to make Catholics look bad. Who knows? That's something I will have to dig into deeper in a future episode. But for now, we just are concerned with the fact that he took the spy network that his father built and expanded it. And ultimately, James I can thank him for saving his life and Parliament's and everybody else who was targeted in the gunpowder plot. Then we have Francis Walsingham, perhaps Elizabeth's most notorious spymaster, often remembered for his unyielding dedication to the protection of the Queen. His tenure as principal secretary was marked by a ruthless efficiency in intelligence gathering and counter-espionage. And you guys, I just said ruthless efficiency, which takes us to today's random Monty Python quote of the day. The Spanish Inquisition, the chief weapon is fear, surprise, a ruthless efficiency. All right, so we got that out of the way. You never know when a random Monty Python quote's going to pop up, do you? It just like just pops up and it just surprises you. Like the Spanish Inquisition. Walsingham witnessed the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre in 1572 as the English ambassador in France, which, of course, would have affected him deeply. He came back to England, resolved to protect Protestant England from similar atrocities. He was galvanized. He expanded the use of espionage to include not only the defensive, but also aggressive tactics, employing spies to infiltrate and undermine opposition groups across Europe. His crowning achievement was the interception of the letters that led to the exposure of the Babington plot in 1586, which, of course, sought the assassination of Elizabeth and the installation of Mary, Queen of Scots, on the English throne. It led to Mary's death. His network's ability to crack codes, utilize double agents, and even use torture when needed, although quite controversial, proved indispensable in maintaining the Queen's safety and Protestant England's sovereignty. So now let's talk about the spy network in action. It was a sophisticated system crucial for the security of her reign in the Protestant state, like I said. The network's efficiency hinged on a meticulous structure of recruitment, information gathering, and innovative espionage techniques. The recruitment of spies was a targeted and strategic process. Walsingham and his colleagues often recruited from among merchants, diplomats, even English students stationed abroad, leveraging their positions to gather intelligence. These spies were not only chosen for their loyalty to the crown, but also for their ability to blend into foreign courts and societies. The network also included double agents and informers within the domestic Catholic factions, providing a steady stream of intelligence about internal threats. Information gathering was diverse and adapted to various contexts. Spies used traditional methods like intercepting letters and eavesdropping, but they also engaged in more direct intelligence gathering by infiltrating enemy ranks and reporting back on military movements or political plans. One notable technique was the use of ciphers and encoded messages to communicate securely. Couriers carried these encrypted messages across borders, reducing the risk of sensitive information falling into enemy hands. The spy network also employed cutting-edge technologies of the time. Cipher disks and codes were developed by mathematicians and cryptologists, enabling the encoding and decoding of messages. Walsingham famously established a dedicated team just for deciphering intercepted communications, a precursor to modern cryptographic teams. Additionally, the network used early forms of invisible ink derived from natural substances like lemons, where they could write secret messages that could only be revealed under specific conditions. Counter-espionage was equally sophisticated. It involved monitoring known Catholic sympathizers and intercepting their communications. Walsingham's agents were adept at turning enemy spies, using them to feed false information back to their original employers. This method effectively confused and undermined opposing spy operations, leading to the thwarting of several plots against the Queen. The effectiveness of Elizabeth's spy network wasn't just in the collection of information, but the ability to preempt and neutralize threats before they could escalate. This proactive approach to intelligence would become a hallmark of modern espionage practices, reflecting the advanced techniques and strategic foresight of Cecil and Walsingham. So now let's talk about three of the main thwarted plots. We'll start with the Ridolfi plot of 1571. This was a well-orchestrated attempt by Roberto Ridolfi, an Italian banker and ardent Catholic, who, of course, wanted to replace Elizabeth with Mary, Queen of Scots, and restore Catholicism to England. Ridolfi conspired with the Duke of Norfolk, a prominent noble, and foreign powers, including Spain and the Pope. The plan involved marrying Mary, Queen of Scots, to Norfolk, raising a Catholic army with Spanish support, and then, of course, assassinating Elizabeth. But the plot was uncovered due to the meticulous surveillance of Catholic nobles practiced by Walsingham's network. Letters detailing the conspiracy were intercepted, and under intense questioning, the implicated parties confessed. Norfolk was executed, and the plot significantly heightened Elizabeth's distrust of Mary, setting the stage for her ongoing imprisonment. 12 years later, we have the Throckmorton plot, spearheaded by Francis Throckmorton, a Catholic conspirator who, again, planned to free Mary, Queen of Scots, and instigate a Spanish invasion of England. There's a pattern emerging here. The plot envisioned Spanish forces landing in England, supported by an uprising of English Catholics. Walsingham's network infiltrated this plot through the use of double agents and surveillance. Throckmorton was arrested, and a search of his residence yielded incriminating evidence, including detailed plans of the invasion and a list of Catholic sympathizers. His confession, obtained under torture, provided further details that helped in arresting many involved, demonstrating again the ruthless efficiency of Walsingham's counterintelligence operations. I'm not going to play Monty Python again, but, you know, just ruthless efficiency. We have a good time, you guys. Then the Babington plot, just 3 years later. This is, of course, the most famous plot foiled by Elizabeth's spy network, led by Anthony Babington. It was a complex scheme that, guess what, once again sought the assassination of Elizabeth and the installation of, guess who, Mary, Queen of Scots. That's right. It's like so unoriginal. They just keep doing the same playbook. Like, after it was foiled once, you'd think maybe they'd find another Catholic they could install. I don't know. But Mary, Queen of Scots, was the most obvious one, and she had a lot of loyalty. So there you go. Anyway, Walsingham's agents, including the ingenious use of a double agent, Gilbert Gifford, managed to intercept letters between Babington and Mary, which were smuggled in beer barrels. These letters contained explicit details on the plot. Walsingham had them decoded from a cipher. The evidence was undeniable, leading to the arrest and execution of Babington and his co-conspirators. And then the involvement of Mary in this plot, as evidenced by her approval of the assassination plan in the letters, led to her trial and eventual execution, marking a significant victory for Elizabeth's security apparatus. In fact, in the letter, I'll have to put it on YouTube or something, the person who deciphered the letter that Mary had written giving her okay After he deciphered it, he actually drew a little picture of a gallows at the bottom because he knew that that would be the end of Mary. These plots showcase the sophistication and effectiveness of Elizabeth's spy network. The discovery and neutralization of the threats was not merely due to luck. They were the result of an expansive and well-maintained network of spies, the use of cutting-edge technology, like we said, and the strategic use of information. Each thwarted plot reinforced the network's methods and the necessity of such a system maintaining the security of the state and the safety of the Queen. So the spy network established during Queen Elizabeth's reign represents a seminal period in the history of intelligence. Its profound impact on English history cannot be overstated. It not only secured the Protestant Reformation in England, but also safeguarded the throne during a time when political and religious upheaval could easily have led to the collapse of Elizabeth. The successful thwarting of multiple high-stakes plots demonstrated the vital role of intelligence in national security and governance. It set a precedent that we still use today in modern intelligence practices. The legacy of the Cecils and Francis Walsingham extends beyond their immediate success in espionage. Their innovative approaches to intelligence, systematic use of informers, development of cryptographic techniques, and strategic misinformation paved the way for contemporary intelligence work. Today, agencies worldwide employ strategies first conceptualized and implemented in Elizabethan England. The idea that a well-organized and proactive intelligence network can decisively influence national and international affairs finds its roots in the work of these Elizabethan figures. So there we go. We will leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining me. I so appreciate you spending your time with me. I will be back in another week. In the meantime, if you ever want to leave me feedback or you want to add to my 4-page list of show ideas, there are two main ways you can hang out and dig deeper and talk to me. The one is you can text the listener support line at 801-6-TESCO. That's 801-683-9756. Or you can also hop into the Tutor Learning Circle, which is a social network just for tutor nerds. There's no politics allowed. There's nothing like that. It's just a basically like if you reinvent Facebook for tutor nerds, that's the Tutor Learning Circle. So hop into the Tutor Learning Circle. Just go to tutorlearningcircle.com. You can go there and talk with other tutor nerds. So again, thank you so much for listening. I will be back next week. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Blow, northern wind, a scentful baby sweating. Blow, northern wind, blow, blow, blow. Ich hörte Bord in Bauerbrick, at Solis am Lies on Sea.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.